Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph from the Fevertree Championships at the Queen's Club. I'm Catherine Whittaker. I have been broadcasting for Amazon Prime all day long on what has been quite a day of Fevertree Championships action. Gigi Salmon alongside me as we sit courtside. The bubble is being inflated, which just, what, 4 or 5 hours ago was being played on by Andy Murray and Nick Kyrgios. Andy Murray's first professional match in 11 months, 341 days, is it? Not that we've all been counting. And he played remarkably well. It was a remarkably competitive match, but he lost it in the end to Nick Kyrgios, 7-5 in the third set. And, well, we shouldn't dwell on this. It's only a footnote, really, but it was a double fault that eventually cost him the match point. It's a wide-ranging question, Gigi, but what are your takeaways from that match?
I think they can only be positives, can't they, for Andy Murray? I'm sure the competitor in him... Good evening and hello, by the way. We've only just really seen each other because you've been with Amazon all day and I've been scurrying around here picking up the bits and pieces. The competitor in Murray will be disappointed that he could have possibly got it done in two and he had that advantage and took the first set. But I think when you think of his pre-match interview saying, I haven't set any goals, there are no expectations, it can only be positives. He put his body through three sets. He's going to feel it tomorrow, but it's good pain that he's going to be feeling because he's back out on the court. We saw him fist pumping. We saw the fighter Andy Murray out there. It was a good test against someone like Nick Kyrgios. I think there can only be positives for Andy Murray to take away. Of course, look, he's a winner. He wants to win every match, but this was his first match back, as you said. So I think it's been a really positive day for Andy Murray.
We'll talk plenty about Nick Kyrgios as well, but it should probably be pointed out that Nick Kyrgios was as keen to talk about Andy Murray and his comeback as we are. And here is a little flavour of what Nick Kyrgios had to say about Andy Murray and what he made of his performance after the match.
On big points, when I won them, I almost felt bad if I showed any emotion. Like, I didn't really want to get into his grill at all. With like other guys, like if I'm up 30, like 30 all, and I win that point, I have a match point, I'm probably getting a bit psyched up. But you know, I just the whole time I was just like, it was kind of good to just see him back out there. But at the same, it was a very awkward match for me because I was thinking like the guy hadn't played a match in a year and I was getting smoked in the first set. I was like, this is not going to be a good look if I lose this match. There was a lot of thoughts going out there. So I'm happy I pulled it through, but ultimately I think just seeing him back out there without, you know, getting through a tough three. I mean, we played for like 2.5 hours. So if tomorrow he pulls up good, then it's probably a success for him. I mean, I'm sure it wasn't anywhere near his highest level, but I wasn't expecting anything less. I knew he was going to compete. I wasn't going to take him long to see the ball at all. I mean, he returned, I thought, unbelievable. Every time he got a racket on the ball, he made my serve back. And, you know, obviously, you know, his serve rhythm and all that will take time to come back. I just thought he maybe got a little bit nervous at times, you know, being back out on the match court. I thought he was a bit, in big moments, he played well. But, every time I played him in the past, he's played unbelievable. On the big points, he's played really well. Today I thought he might have got a little bit nervous. Like, he would have never doubled like on match point then, like when I played him years ago. But you know, that was his first match back. But he returns unbelievable. I think everything's the same really. It's just he's got to get matches under his belt. Yeah, his backhand's money. His returns, as I said, returns, backhand, it's tough to really see. I mean his movement seemed okay, but if the question is if he's going to be able to back it up day after day, and we'll see how it goes for him. But today, I think it's positive for him.
So that's Nick Kyrgios, worried that he was going to get smoked by a guy in his first professional match in 11 months in the first set, then started playing his way into it. Sounds like he was troubled by, very ironically, a hip problem throughout. Very impressed with Murray's return of serve and backhand in particular. He said the nerves are understandable and the serve will come back with time. Yeah. That's his assessment, and he knows probably better than, well, certainly either of us.
It was really nice to get that assessment from it's quite rare that you get the opponent to come off and they've just won, giving quite a detailed assessment on someone that they've just beaten. But such is the respect, and they were chatting a little bit earlier in the players' lounge, and they get on really, really well. And Kyrgios would have been as happy as anybody that Andy Murray was back there and out on court. It's his first victory over Andy Murray. How much he will take out of that, because Murray was just returning. But it was nice to see and hear his assessment and see how he was out on court. A really good victory for Nick Kyrgios to come through. He's another one of those. I know he's box office, and I know people, you would pay to come and see him, but there are times you think, oh no.
He frustrates you, doesn't he, Gigi? Yeah. He frustrates you. And I absolutely know. He frustrates me at times as well. It's just I don't know. I make allowances for him because I realise that he has to do the things he does to keep himself interested.
But how long do you keep making these allowances for? I agree that he's box office. I think the frustrating thing is he's got more talent in his little finger than most people out there who have ever taken to a tennis court.
But he knows that, doesn't he? He knows that.
But that's quite frustrating because you think, why don't you? I guess
he
just
doesn't
know
us,
care
anything
about it as much as people think he should. It's a job that he does for a living, maybe rather than a passion.
Sometimes he's passionate, though, isn't he? He cared today. He cared about aspects of the match today.
There we go, aspects. He cared about aspects of the match today.
He cared a lot about Andy Murray. He cared a lot about how Andy Murray was after the match.
Yeah, of course.
That was his first thought. In his immediate post-match interviews here, he did one with the BBC and one with Amazon. They said, oh, how are you feeling? Great win, great performance. Your first ever win at the Queen's Club. That needs to be pointed out. He's 0-3 coming into this match. He was 0-5 against Andy Murray. So it's actually a pretty big result for Nick Kyrgios. And he said, well, all I can think about is whether Andy's okay. I just want to go and chat to him and check he's all right.
He's a nice guy. And from people you speak to who have worked with him, and I've spoken to former coaches of his girlfriend, Ayla Tomljanovic, spent a lot of time around him. So he's a really nice guy. He's caring, he's kind, he's considerate. And you see all that in the foundation he's set up. And he's really working and playing tennis to get money to put into the foundation. It's just sometimes on court, you'll still look for him on a schedule, but it sometimes gets very, very frustrating.
But does he, just because he has all this talent, he doesn't owe anything to us. I mean, we might have talents at things that we're not fulfilling. I could be a fantastic bassoonist.
You ever picked up a bassoon?
No, I've never picked up a bassoon. But do you
just wondering where a bassoon came from?
I don't know. I have never picked up a bassoon, just to be clear. But I might have a fantastic bassooning talent that I'm not fulfilling currently.
You might
and
do
and other
this
less
week.
Talented bassoonists that are you know, plugging away, desperately trying to make the best of their limited bassoon talents, might feel resentful.
No, he doesn't. Look, he doesn't owe us anything, and you would still, if you're a tennis fan, pay to watch him, and you'll see him on a schedule and get excited, as I do. But there was just a little thing in the back of my mind when I saw this matchup, very keen to see what Andy Murray looked back. But there's a bit about Kyrgios going, I don't know what we're going to get from Nick Kyrgios. It's just getting to a point, and I'm like, I've said this too many times, and it's of his own making. And no, he doesn't owe anyone anything. It's just frustrating when you see someone with so much talent and they're out there on the court. You just want them to realise it.
You know David Law's theory, don't you? David Law's theory is that he cares too much, that he's afraid to let people know how much he cares. It's all not quite an act, but certainly he's got a front up.
Protecting himself,
yeah. He doesn't want people to know exactly how much he cares.
Yeah, it could be a little bit. It seems like he's quite a sensitive fella. But it's just frustrating. There was a time in the second set, towards the end of the first, you thought, oh, this could go away really quickly. He's not interested. And the tweeners were coming left, right and centre, just all over the place. And you thought, really? And then the serves were going all over the place. And you just thought, not again. I think there's just too many times you feel that you've said with Nick Kyrgios, not again, when you know how well he can play. But as you say, he doesn't owe us anything. And if you see him on a schedule, you'll still head to the court to watch him.
Just another few words on Andy Murray, because it is a huge story. Win or lose today, it was always going to be a huge story. And yes, okay, he lost, but I think the nature of the loss, you know, justifies us giving it the airtime, and no doubt the airtime it'll get in the papers tomorrow as well. He said, incidentally, he's not ruling out playing Eastbourne at this stage. In fact, he was pretty open, I think, impressed, considering it was, you know, what, an hour and a half after the match. He said, yeah, that is definitely an option for me. I need to see how I pull up physically. He expects to be sore tomorrow. How could he not be sore tomorrow? It was a 2-hour, 39-minute match. But anyway, why don't we just hear from the man himself?
I thought I did okay. I certainly could have done some stuff better, like beginning of the second set. I thought my level at times was good, sometimes not so good. You know, serve at the end of the match, I didn't feel like I served particularly well in the third set. But, I did some good stuff as well. Physically, I did okay as well. I didn't feel amazing physically. Like, at the end, I was starting to tire a bit. You know, but it was a good test for me for first match in such a long time. I was quite emotional, actually, after my practice today because, well, I don't know exactly why, but it was just sort of like, it's come around kind of quite quickly as well from, in terms of like where I was like 4 or 5 weeks ago to now. It's obviously been such a long time. I was obviously really looking forward to playing a match. You know, there's lots of, well, you know, like players and, you know, fans and stuff coming up and saying to me, like, it's great to see you back and, you know, can't wait to see you play and stuff. So, you know, that was, you know, it was nice. And yeah, I was emotional before the match. Once it got going, you know, I was okay. There was times where I was sort of thinking a little bit towards the end, like, of the match when I was getting close to the finish line, which, you know, maybe because it was my first match in a long time and I obviously would have loved to have won, you know, emotions kind of got in the way a little bit there. But yeah, it was a good experience.
So that's Andy Murray. Disappointed, of course, the competitive juices were flowing out there. He'll never be able to turn that tap off, nor would he want to. I mean, that alone wins in matches and will continue to win in matches that he might not have any right to win. He'll always have that edge on most other players out there, won't he? So that'll help him haul himself over the line. But I don't know, it was a difficult match against Nick Kyrgios to really get. I mean, it's all about the movement, isn't it, for Andy Murray? How able were we today, do you think, to gauge where his movement is at? Because you get no rhythm from Nick Kyrgios. No, it's not like it was a baseline slog where he was back and forth all the time. And
from the movement we saw, it looked good. You did feel the longer it went, the more it would swing in favour of Nick Kyrgios, not just because he's the player in form and has been playing, but because Andy Murray hasn't had that competitive time on court. And physically, however fit he is and whatever he's been doing in the gym, it's going to be tough the longer it went on. But in terms of movement, and I spoke to a couple of the journalists here and you spoke to a couple of spectators, everyone seemed to agree that the movement seemed good. There didn't seem to be any difficulty in the movement. Andy Murray, as you said, it's going to be tough. He said the glute especially, but for anybody playing that first match on grass of the season, the next day they're going to be sore in bits they never knew existed, because that's the nature of switching the surfaces. But it looked okay. You talked about the serve, and Kyrgios touched on the serve. That's going to come. That's all practice. But I'm no expert on the intricacies of the biomechanisms of the body, but he looked as if he was moving okay. He didn't seem to be wincing, he didn't seem to be pulling up, which is something we get used to with Andy Murray. So fingers crossed, he's a little bit sore in the morning, but nothing too serious, and he can get back on the court.
He was one of two Brits that lost today, Dan Evans the other. He led 5-2 in the deciding set against Adrian Mannarino, having won the second set 6-0. He received treatment on what looked like a hamstring injury late on in the first set, lost that, I think, 6-4, won the second 6-0, was 5-2 up in the third, ended up losing it. By all accounts, he was pretty distraught, and very understandably so.
Yeah, he was in a winning position, but at the same time, you could look at it and say he hasn't been in this type of situation for a long time. Coming back at the lower levels to work his way up and getting a wild card here, again, you would say that there's lots of positives. He got a tricky player like Adrian Mannarino. No, this isn't Mannarino's best surface, but he got a player like Adrian Mannarino in a position where he could have closed out the match. There's a little bit of slipping and sliding early on, and he had words with the chair umpire. He wasn't happy with the surface, and as you said, he had a little bit of treatment. And of course, he'll be disappointed. Anyone in that position will be. But look, it's easy, isn't it, for us to say, sitting here with the microphone. But he's got to surely be happy with the fact that he kept someone at that level right to the end on the ropes. He just couldn't cross the finish line, but that will come in time because he's got to get the matches back under his belt.
Wimbledon wildcards, incidentally, get announced tomorrow or possibly today, depending on when you're listening to this. They will get announced on Wednesday. That is something we will cover in tomorrow's podcast. It will be very interesting to see what they do.
What's your feeling on that?
With Dan Evans, I think a qualifying wildcard. What do you think?
I think that would be a good compromise from the All England club.
It's a helpful option to have.
He's done really well coming back and he's played well, so this is an opportunity. But he's still got to come through the matches to get into the main draw. I'd be a little bit surprised if it was straight into the main draw.
We did have a British winner today, Kyle Edmund. Very impressive, actually. It was a match that could easily have been held over until tomorrow. What time was it when they took to the court? About 7:30 at least?
It was pretty late.
Because the matches had gone pretty long, obviously, in particular the Kyrgios-Murray match. And when he found himself in a first set tiebreak against Ryan Harrison, you're thinking, goodness me, this one's probably going to go the distance. They might not get done tonight. Last thing you want is to be coming back and playing on Wednesday, probably your only day off of the week. But he got the job done. His first win on home soil as a British number one, Gigi.
That must feel really good, because a lot of whispers were that he was feeling a little bit nervous coming into this, because this is his first grass court, his first home season as a British number one, and it does come with more pressure and it comes with more commitments and more people asking you to do things at tournaments, press calls and photo shoots, and there's the World Cup, and
he probably is getting photoshopped as well.
He will hope not. The athletes don't need to be photoshopped. I think that's for a different podcast. But he did feel... he's a quiet guy. He's a shy guy. And I know he was feeling a little bit nervous about all the demands on him. So I think everyone was trying to do their best just to keep him as relaxed as possible. And it was a very good win out here on the centre court as British number one. He won't be facing the British number three in the next round because Nick Kyrgios came through. But a really good straight sets win.
And the thing is, for Kyle Edmund, this isn't his favourite surface, is it? It might be his favourite time of year in terms of enjoying being at home and playing at home, but this is probably the time of year when he limits his hopes the most. So you kind of expect British players to come into the Wimbledon time of year, pre-Wimbledon events, and say, yeah, I'm so happy to be on the grass. This is exactly where I want to be. I look forward to this time of year for the other 48 weeks. And look, he loves playing in front of a home crowd. I don't doubt that for a second. But in terms of his style, where he expects the most from himself, it ain't here.
It's not, as you say. Probably if you asked him what he most likes about this time of year, it's probably he can sleep in his own bed.
eat at the restaurants he likes. That's what he just told me.
Eat at the restaurants he likes and be with family and friends and sleep in his own bed. And that's such a boost for these players because the season is so long and they are very, very rarely at home. But as you said, it's not the favoured service of Kyle Edmund, but he will have to deal moving forward, going into Eastbourne, going into Wimbledon as being the top-ranked British player. And with that comes pressure and expectation.
Just to run you through with a few other results today. In fact, one result, well, a sort of a bizarre sequence of events with a match that took place on court one today. Milos Raonic defeated Yuki Bambury, a former junior world number one, a qualifier here. Yuki Bambury did really well to come through qualifying, beat Taylor Fritz in the final round. Raonic won 6-1, 3-1 by virtue of retirement from Bambury, who had his knee heavily strapped up, really was suffering by the end of that match. Raonic looking in very fine fettle. That happened, I think that was the first match of the day on court one. So that match came to a conclusion around about 1 p.m. And then at about 7 p.m. we received the news that Milos Raonic was pulling out of the tournament due to a right pectoral injury, which I think is the same, very coincidentally, injury that Serena Williams pulled out of the French Open with. So that's a slightly bizarre and very disappointing sequence of events there, that Milos Raonic won't be able to progress through to a match that we were so looking forward to for all of about 45 minutes when we thought it was happening. Milos Raonic against defending champion Feliciano Lopez, because Lopez came through an absolute corker against the fourth seed David Goffin. The score was, he came through in the third set, didn't he? It was 6-3, 6-7, 6-3. Very well played, Feliciano Lopez. And Gigi, you caught up with him afterwards.
Feliciano, congratulations.
Thank you.
A good win, your second top 10 win of the year, and a great way to kick off the defence of your title.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, when I saw the draw, I was not so happy. knowing that I'm gonna play David in the first round, and he's going to be so tough. I mean, even more defending the title. No, you won just one or two matches, you know, where you don't have to face a top 10 player. But this is Queens, you know. Every year they have the best players in the draw. Last year was the same. I had to beat, you know, Dimitrov and Berdych, Cilic in order to win the title. No, so even though I was expecting to play some great players in the first round, not the top five or six, but I'm very happy. I think I played great today. One of the best matches so far this year.
It might not make a difference, but does it feel any different coming into a tournament where you're the defending champion? Does it really increase the pressure or not at all?
It is, yeah, because I'm starting the week with 500 points less. It's a lot of pressure, but at the same time, it's a great feeling, no? Coming back to this beautiful tournament, you know, as a champion. It's an amazing feeling, and yeah, I think there's no better way to start the tournament off, you know, beating David Goffin in the first round.
I remember speaking to you last year after you had won the title. It was such an emotional week for you. How often do you think back to that week last year? Because you said it was the week of your career.
It was probably the week of my career, together with one or two more, you know, during 20 years of playing tennis. And yeah, it's a great memories. You try to go back to those moments where you were playing great, when you were feeling these emotions, and you just try to bring them back this year again. No, it's very tough to do that. No, but this is what you try. No, when you have to defend the title, and I know I'm a good player on grass. I have a good last week, losing to Nick in the quarters, but playing good tennis. No, for the, you know, it's tough for the players to play in the grass. You know, it's from one year to the other. We don't feel the grass. It's 1 year without playing on that surface, so that makes things difficult. And for me, last week was a great week in terms of, you know, spending time on the grass, winning matches, and I'm playing against Simon, Kyrgios, very very good players. And I came here with a lot of confidence, you know, knowing that I'm a good player on grass. But when I saw the draw, I thought, wow, it can go either way, and I think I played very good today. Otherwise, I think I couldn't have, you know, couldn't, you know, make it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
He seemed to be in good spirits. I mean, he had a smile on his face. He likes being back here as defending champion. He spoke to us, didn't he, at the end of the tournament last year, and he was so emotional about the whole thing. And it's only his second, as I also his second top 10 win of 2018.
That is crazy, isn't it? That really, I mean, it's not been the best of years for him. We know he's going to be Madrid tournament director come next year. So this is likely his last year on the tour.
Don't tell him that. No.
He's not saying it.
No,
but
not that word.
No.
I think maybe you can do a year as tournament director and playing, but I think beyond that, you've really got to
That's
stop
sort of
and
what
do.
He's doing now, though, isn't it?
Well, no, because Manolo Santana was the figurehead / tournament director.
Let's go more with figurehead.
If he wanted to get away with it, I think he could do one more year as both, but then I think he'd really have to hang up the racket and focus on Madrid.
He was probably, for all of about 45 minutes, really looking forward to getting back out on what would definitely have been a centre court match against Milos Raonic for his second round, and he's not going to have that moment.
But surely
now,
you've got to be happy with a walkover.
Yeah.
Surely.
Yeah, but he loves this place. He loves this tournament. He would have relished the. He would have so looked forward. I know he's still going to get to walk out.
Do you want to play on centre court against
court
Milos Raonic, former finalist who could beat you? Would you like a walkover to the next round?
All right, okay.
Taking the walkover.
He's taking the walkover. He's putting his feet up. He's watching the football. He's having a lovely time in London. What else have we had today, Gigi? Jeremy Shardy. Of all the players on form in grass, he's probably got to be right up there at the top. He a semi-finalist in Nottingham, a winner in Surbiton the week before, and now he's won through to the second round with a victory 6-2, 6-4 over Tim Smicek, a qualifier. Leo Meyer has knocked out our third seed, Kevin Anderson. That's a horrible result for Kevin Anderson, isn't it? 7-6, 4-6, 7-6. Now, I know that, you know, that's a knife edge, it's tiebreakers, but Anderson wanted better.
Yeah, no, absolutely, especially moving on to the grass. And I think, look, if you're really tall with a big server and says, well, you're going to win everything on grass and do really well, and Kevin Anderson will, I'm sure, be very, very disappointed with that result against Leon O'Meara, who's not known for his grass court prowess.
Julien Benneteau, a man who's rivaling Leighton Hewitt for not being able to retire abilities, defeated Thomas Burdick. Why should he retire at the age of 37 when he's beating the 8th seed Thomas Burdick 7-5, 3-6, 6-3? The woes continue for Thomas Burdick in 2018. And we haven't even talked about the wins for Novak Djokovic and Grigor Dimitrov, possibly because they feel like they happened 400 years ago as we sit here with the sun setting. Oh, well, actually, the sun set about 400 years ago. But the light fading over the centre court and the bubble very much fully inflated.
It's definitely nighttime.
There
now is
the low hum of merry members. There's no raucous drunkenness. It's
Tuesday night.
Very
I think
pleasant.
It's too early for raucous drunkenness.
Yeah, there's happiness.
There's happiness.
There's contentment
Tuesday
all around.
Happiness.
But how about Novak Djokovic today, Gigi? That was statement tennis, I thought, from him.
Yeah, it was very clean tennis, wasn't it, against John Millman. John Millman, who came through the qualifying competition and said it was just sort of an honour. He said, yes, of course, the draw could have been easier and nicer, but at a tournament like this, it's dangerous wherever you look. But Novak Djokovic was in clinical form, wasn't he, getting the job done. And he looks and has looked very relaxed since he's been here. He hasn't been here since 2010 when he won the doubles title, finalist here in 2008. And he's looking good. And people keep asking the question, can anyone rival Roger Federer at Wimbledon? And depending how the draw falls, maybe it can be. We did for ATP Tennis Radio, we did a time capsule at the start of the year in Australia, and we had to predict winners of all the Grand Slams, headlines of the year, next gen winners. There was hundreds of questions. I've forgotten most of them, but I do remember tipping Novak Djokovic to win Wimbledon. I obviously didn't know how the start of the year would or wouldn't go, but I'm starting to feel a little bit of, I'm not here stating he's going to win Wimbledon, but I'm feeling a little bit more positive than I did a few months ago.
The Novak Djokovic that beat John Millman today, 6-2, 6-1, could very easily challenge at Wimbledon. It's just a question of whether he can maintain the consistency. Yeah. It's been so in and out, but I was very impressed with him today. A little bit less so by the second seed, Grigor Dimitrov. He came through 6-3, 6-7, 6-3, but I think he needs to up his game in the next round against Novak Djokovic. That match will be on Thursday. We have very, very limited time, Gigi, to whiz through the schedule for tomorrow. We open on the centre court with Francis Tiafoe, the next-gen star, against Leo Meyer, the conqueror of Kevin Anderson. Stan Wawrinka against Sam Querrey. Marin Cilic against Gilles Muller. I wouldn't want to be a tennis ball in that one. And then, Gigi, on the centre court, Leighton Hewitt and Nick Kyrgios in doubles action against Pierre-Hugues Herbert and Nicolas Mahut. Now, Nick Kyrgios told us, when did we speak to him? On Sunday or Monday? It was yesterday, wasn't it? It was yesterday that we spoke to him, that he worries every time he gets called up to play with Leighton because he doesn't want to be responsible for him losing his last ever match, because you just don't know when his last ever tour match is going to be. He might never be able to retire.
Well, I brought up with Leighton Hewitt on Media Day, and I said, but you're playing a lot of doubles. I thought you'd retired. I didn't put it quite as bluntly as that. And he said, I never said I was retiring from doubles. So that sounds like a man who's got plenty more doubles matches left in him.
Apparently, you need to be very specific about what you're retiring from. Are you retiring from mixed doubles? Are you retiring from men's doubles? Over on Court 1, we also have Daniil Medvedev against Jeremy Shardy. That is the only other singles match of the day. But Gigi, I think we do just have time to hear from Stan Wawrinka, because we've not had that much opportunity to talk about him, perhaps because our expectations are lower for him on the grass. But let's face it, he was very good indeed in round number one, and he plays the 2010 champion Sam Querrey tomorrow.
Stan, it's lovely to have you here, and I'm sure after everything you've been through, just so nice for you to be back out here competing and winning.
Yes, no, it's great for sure, especially here at the Queen's Club. Was a great day today on the court, sunny, a great match also, first match winning, so it's great, I'm really happy.
Now, I don't know if it's going to change this year because you talked about still doing work on the fitness after the injury, but do you get time to explore London? Do you like exploring London?
I love London as a city. I always enjoy it. During Wimbledon Queens, we always rent a house for a month, so we have a little bit more time. And I had the chance also to play the World Tour final a few years, so it was always something different to stay in the city also.
Now, I'm thinking, though, with the World Cup on, you might not be sightseeing, you might be watching football. Switzerland against Brazil, 1-1. Were you expecting anything from that match?
I was hoping, for sure. I think it was a great match to play, for sure. Brazil was a big favorite on the match, so I was a little bit nervous when I saw that Brazil score early in the match, but they played really well, and it's a good start for Swiss.
So how do you work things with matches and needing to see Switzerland play? Do you need to have a word with the tournament director? Do you need to be nice and smile at someone so they don't put you on a match that could clash with Switzerland playing?
I'm always nice and smiling to everybody. This doesn't change now, but at the end of the day, I'm here to play tennis, so I'm focusing on that. And luckily, yesterday they were playing the night, so it was perfect.
I think that was the right answer. Now, this is going to be a very tough part of the interview. I'm going to hand you this glass of sticks. Okay. If you could pull out, we'll start with one. Okay. Read the question and give us your answer. And I apologize in advance for whatever's on them.
What can you do that will surprise people?
I guess it's like a party trick. Do you have a party trick?
A party trick?
Maybe. Is there something you can do that you think, I never thought Stan would do that?
No, not. I'm good to find good present for people. So.
Are you?
In general, they're happy when I offer them something for birthday.
So you could be like a concierge service. We could come to you needing something.
I'm good for that. To organise also things, I'm really good.
Really good at organising things.
Yes.
For John Millman, his party trick is he can tie a knot in his tongue with a snake.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That's good for him.
And he's going to be apparently so.
When he's going to do it?
He's going to do it tomorrow.
Okay.
Tomorrow morning around 11 o'clock-ish?
It's
we're going to film that in the players' lounge.
Perfect.
Right, back into the cup.
See another what's one?
Yep, another couple, I think.
What are you addicted to?
I would
say my phone and coffee.
Really? How much coffee? Because I can't imagine coffee is good for an athlete. Is coffee good for an athlete?
Apparently it's not bad.
So how many coffees a day?
No, I try to be okay now. I change a little bit. I stopped drinking too much, but 4 or 5 for sure.
A day?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, and a final stick? Stan?
Who did the question? What will you sing at karaoke?
That's a brave one to pick.
Yeah, it's a good one, this one. I'm really bad singer, so I'm not going to do it now. So don't even ask me after I say it. But French singer, like Patrick Bruel. Was my favorite when I was young.
Charles Aznavour, something like that? Or?
No, but it's good also.
It's good also.
Yeah.
And you're not going to sing, but Stan, thank you very much, and we wish you luck for this tournament and beyond.
Thank you very much.
So that was Stan Wawrinka with Gigi in very good spirits, I thought. And maybe it sounds strange to think of him sneaking his way through anywhere, what with, what a big name and star he is. But I think actually a run here would be a bit of a sneaky thing to do.
Yeah, I think it would. I think it's a big difference that Magnus Norman is back with Stan. They were such a good partnership. Magnus Norman took a little bit of time off, did a few other things. So I think that's made a big difference. He talks about all the fitness work that he's doing. He says, you know, the knee's fine. I'm gonna, you know, Stan, he's very laid back. He's very relaxed. But he seems to be in good form. Talks about how much he loves London. He's enjoying the World Cup. He's trying to mix the World Cup. He said he smiles at everybody when he sees them. So this is a happy ever again. If he could have put a run together here, as you say, no one's expecting it. No one's talking about it because of these attempted comebacks from the knee problem. But he had 2 weeks before this to really, really pound on that fitness and be in the gym. So we might get a few wins from Wawrinka leading into Wimbledon.
That's for tomorrow. We will be back, Gigi, with another podcast then. Thank you very much once again for your company. We have been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, from day two of the Fever Tree Championships. It is broadcast on the BBC and, of course, on Amazon Prime Video. I'm very biased because I'm working for them and I think the coverage is absolutely brilliant. So make sure you check that out. We've been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you, as I say, in association with The Telegraph, with our executive producers, Triple S, Melanie Bowes and Tennis Ball. With La Manga Club and with Charlie the Ferret, and we'll be back tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.